I'm Jeannie.
I'm Rachel.
And I'm Nikki from Tyrion's Landing,
a podcast member of the Gonna Geek Network,
just like the one you're listening to now.
The opinions expressed are those of each individual.
Check out all the other podcasts at GonnaGeekNetwork.com.
And get ready, because geekiness begins in...
3, 2, 1.
Hello, this is Peter Davis, and you're listening to Gallifrey Public Radio.
Welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to everything in the Doctor Who spectrum. We invite you to join us each week for discussions ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi and beyond. Your GPR staff are Jay Witten.
You see how clever I was there? You make that connection? Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Keir Hansen.
Proactive, reactive, proactive. I'm making up words as I go here.
And Haley Malley.
Hey, that wasn't exactly what I was going to say at all, Jay. Thanks.
Oh, and
spoilers.
We do occasionally discuss recent news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired in their home territories. But don't worry. If we dip too far into the future, we'll give you fair warning.
Welcome to episode 235 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we look squarely at the middle child in the family and ask them directly, are you an Empire Strikes Back or a Matrix Reloaded sort of kid? Oops, hang on. My phone's buzzing. Oh, no. Oh, no, no, no. I am Jay, and with me in the GPR studios this week, looking like he's nursing a massive hangover, is Keir. Keir, how are you doing?
I'm going to be just fine. It might have been bacteria.
And over trying to tape her reading glasses back together is Haley. Haley, what's going on?
I can't see without my glasses. This week, we puzzle at the second part of what is billed as a three-part story contending with the monks in The Pyramid at the End of the World. A 5,000-year-old pyramid has materialized overnight at the vertex between three world superpowers, and the corpses in red are offering not to hold off on domination, but to save us from ourselves. So what's the catch?
What could possibly go wrong? So middle child episode.
Which means we'll forget about it by the end of the season.
Potential. It gets no Christmas presents. Haley's coming from a dark place there, right? I don't understand. So how do we feel about this? I'm reading some very, very mixed reviews from a lot of the pundits out there, and I personally felt really mixed after the first and the second views of this. How do we walk away from this one?
Haley, what was your takeaway?
As is always the part with a multi-part story, I liked it watching it, but I have to wait to see, you know, how the story works out to know for sure how I really feel about it.
Okay.
I have some specific thoughts on lab protocols, but that's not an overall story opinion.
Okay. That's going to be a really distinguishing factor. We're going to have to make a conscious decision about whether we're going to get hung up on some of the technical aspects of this episode or whether we're going to look at where this progresses our story. So,
and that's the main thing, is that this episode was a progression episode. This needed to get us from the end of, you know, the Doctor figuring out the whole thing with the Matrix, or, you know, the not Matrix, whatever, and get us to the point where he now has to save the world. So this was a lot of setup to get from point A to point B. Yeah. And they took a lot of liberties to get us there, because at the end of it, it needed to serve that purpose. So, yeah, dodgy lab protocols and some quick assumptions and things like that. It is what it is. It's part and parcel.
So I guess if we know that, if we're kind of expecting this to be a story that is getting us to the next plateau of this issue, let's look at that first and foremost before we start tearing this thing to shreds from some of the technicalities, because you could very easily do that. And I think a lot of people who viewed it looked at it and went, well, all right, well, I'll draw you a pass on that because I'm trying to figure out where the story is headed. If we look at just the progression of the storyline, if we talk about the idea of knowing that we have dealt with this hyper-intelligent adversary who has, as they mentioned many times in this episode, have plotted our possible actions to the nth degree. I mean, how many threads were in that glowing trunk that they were, you know, watching all the possible outcomes? And they keep coming to the same conclusion. There's a certain aspect of it where you got to wonder, how benign or malignant are they really? Because when we catch wind of what they're really saying is going to be the distinguishing factor that eradicates all life from the planet, and they're offering to help us from this, is that really such a dick move? Really? I mean...
Well, I mean, they really have reached the point where they said, okay, you can either no longer exist or you can keep going on our rules. So it's not a thing of, hey, we're here to conquer you. It's, look, things are going to go badly. So you can either, you know, give us your planet or cease to exist. So yeah, it's not really a, you know, we're here to conquer and we're here to take over. So I don't know. I mean, it's, as Haley said before, you know, we're going to have to wait till the next episode to see how bad the situation really gets. But, you know, they waited to the point where it's like, you no longer have a choice. It's either, you know, extinction or living under our subjugation.
Right. I got to wonder if this is sort of their MO. Mm-hmm. You know, this is something where, because of their hyperintelligence, because of their ability to be able to plot the potential outcomes of a lot of civilization advance, anywhere they choose to cast their lens, that they watch and they bide their time until a species is at that tipping point, and then they walk in at that moment and say, okay, you can either serve us or be eradicated. We're here to be your saviors if you consent to us.
Deus ex machina. Yeah.
So, and that their definition of consent is just creepy as hell. You have to love us.
Yeah, I had a major problem with the way that was worded towards the end, where they're like, love is consent. I'm like, whoa, hold on.
They chose the word consent all through the episode. That's a very weighted word.
Yeah, extremely weighted. I mean, I almost wonder what Harness and Moffat were really kind of digging at in this one as co-writers on this episode. This was... All right, think about the episodes we know from Peter Harness. We'll put Kill the Moon aside.
Don't do science.
because we're going to put that one aside. But look at the Zygon invasion and Zygon inversion. Mm-hmm. And the careful wordsmithing that was done in that one. You know, I don't think there was a lot of wasted dialogue in those episodes, because it was really a matter of understanding that the weight of what was being discussed by the characters at the moment that they were being put under the greatest duress. Here, you have an adversary that is vying for consent, and yet they are brought into this presence among humans in this iteration of the world cycle under veritas, truth. I mean, these are big, huge terms to throw around. Consent, truth, love. And then they start dissecting the fact that, well, fear is not consent. You're gone.
Strategy is not
strategy.
Consent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is... It was a very, very distinct semantics. Mm-hmm. So I have to wonder whether there was something to that, or whether it was really just a matter of, because of the sheer weight of the word in all its timeliness, that they were toying around with. I don't know. I found that particularly disturbing. I have a lot of respect for the way that what they've created with these monks. I think this is becoming a more and more interesting villain adversary by the day.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're complicated. And I think, you know, we talk a lot about the fact that a really good villain is one that you can understand where they're coming from, even if you don't agree with their strategy. You see why they are what they are. They have some sort of a drive that to them makes sense. The flip side of it is, I always like the idea of some sort of a counterpoint where you don't know where they're coming from, but they are clearly very set in their ways. And it's the mystery of what their motivation is that makes them as much a concern as their, you know, demonstrated strength or whatever it is. Because I can't figure them out, that has me just as involved as if it were kind of a Sherlock Moriarty sort of rapport, where they seem like they're coming at it on equal footing. And to a certain degree, it seems like that. I mean, the doctor, once again, we talked about this last week, the doctor is rattled. You know, he's dealing with something that is clearly, if not greater than a lot of things that he's faced, it's at least unfamiliar, and that has him shaken.
Yeah. And the fact that, you know, he's so many steps behind, you know, it's like Bill points out at one point, it's like, you know, they have been planning this from the inception of our planet, you know, from the inception of our species, and you're going to figure it out in 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. Like that's the way that the doctor is facing this right now. So it's, yeah, you can understand why he's a little bit flustered.
Yeah. Oh, he says it as much too. Doesn't he have the lines like, since you first flopped out of the water?
Mm-hmm.
This is an enemy that plays the longest game possible.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, from the beginning of the episode, you see the woman whose glasses get smashed in the door. And I thought it was going to be like, oh, that was the thing they didn't account for. Some little nuance of human behavior that they missed.
Butterfly effect, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah. No, that was the thing they were counting on all along.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If she had just stuck her foot in there. Who puts their handbag in the door, really?
Yeah, no, it's...
Okay, well, I mean, if we're going to talk about some of the little details here, and I think we should probably just monitor ourselves to make sure we don't descend too far into over-dissecting the episode for the sake of... Because since we know this is the middle child, and, you know, you got to wait and see how the youngest is going to turn out before you go blaming the middle child for all the ills of the family. I have one kind of big question here, and this isn't something that's necessarily any kind of a critique of the episode. It's just something that I thought would really drive things very differently. And I haven't really seen a lot of people take this apart yet. Where was UNIT?
That's what I was wondering. I'm like, we've got the United Nations. Doesn't UNIT kind of go hand in hand there? Like,
Yeah. This would have been an excellent situation to call in, you know, the strategic aspect of Kate and Osgood and just or even just, I mean, even if they weren't intrinsically involved in the episode, just a presence. I mean, all of a sudden we are now officially reverting to UN blue helmets. I mean, it just seemed really unusual, especially at a time in Moffat's tenure where he's really ramping up the utilization of that military presence.
The only reason why I can see going this route would be because you needed the Secretary General of the UN so that you could have somebody in power die, and he didn't want to kill off Kate Stewart.
But you could even avoid that. Like, even if it's, you know, we couldn't get the actors to do Osgood and Kate, you just have some UN general on the ground who is, you know, phoning back to headquarters every once in a while, and that could be the person who dies.
Right.
Yeah.
Or you could have UN presence with UNIT.
Yeah, it's a matter of jurisdiction. I mean, UNIT is there to oversee, to make sure that things don't escalate. But when it comes to negotiations, that's where it comes down to the nations involved. I mean, UNIT is there as an intelligence task force. They're not as a governmental entity. So they defer to, you know, the representatives of the nations involved.
Right. Their complete absence, though, is conspicuous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For what it's worth. I keep reminding myself, yes, it's a middle episode, but, and I understand that, you know, we finally got an opportunity to resolve this at the pinnacle moment, and we'll get to the freaking lock system in a second. But the final reveal to Bill that the doctor is blind, I'm still... The more I watch of this, the more I watch the last two episodes, how did she not notice?
Yeah, well, I mean, she did notice that something was going on. She did notice that he was, you know, there was something off about him. But to be fair, the doctor is fundamentally quirky.
Yes, but by counterpoint, Bill is the consummate questioner.
Mm-hmm.
She sits there and pulls threads when the doctor tells her, put that down. And she keeps picking at things because that's who she is. And that's one of the things that makes her such an effective companion, is because she probes, you know, at the most difficult times. And the doctor is forced to confront these things.
And that's the part that bothered me so much, is the fact that she just asked the question and let it go. It was so completely out of character for what we've seen so far.
Yeah.
To be fair, the world was ending at the time. She might have had other things on her mind.
But I think that's indicative of what's going on. I mean, the bigger the situation gets around her, the more that she doubles down on the things that matter to her personally. It's almost as if the larger the scale of the concern, the more she tunnels in on those little things that just happen to be the most important things in retrospect.
Well, in the last episode, the doctor kind of sent her away from him, so they weren't together much. She wouldn't have had a lot to observe to notice things going on. And then that turned out to not be the real doctor and Bill anyways. And then in this episode, they also did not spend a lot of time really together.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, but again, her inquisition, her, when they all sit down to Google. Okay. All right. I guess I might as well address that. So there were a lot of leaps in this episode.
Yeah, a little bit.
So 1,000 different, you know, 100,000, 10,000, 100,000 different things that could have possibly caused the eradication of life on the planet as we know it. Where do we begin? Nardal. Bacteria. Excellent. Let's go from there.
Yeah.
Those kind of leaps. I understand having to move the plot forward, but I'm wondering if there may have been a more graceful way to get us to that conclusion. I like the whole elimination process, going through the lab studies. I thought that was all right. A little, you know, it's not exactly valid science, but okay, but they're doing their thing, and there was a rationale for it. But just that initial jump into the pool that said, okay, well, if it wasn't World War that killed all life on Earth, what could it be? And Nardal, smack off the bat, jumps to...
Just nailed it, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they kind of played it maybe doing something else by having the Chinese general bring up, you know, flu and disease, and the doctor marks that off. But it's like they didn't keep going on the list of other things it could possibly be.
Yeah, that could have been a nice little breakdown. They could have slowly taken that apart and said, all right, well... Disease, I understand that, but that can be contained. You know, something needs to be, it needs to happen. It has to spread more virulently and da 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 da, and work that apart. I guess it was just that leap onto that mesa that seemed a bit much. Do we want to talk about the combination lock?
Oh, or how about the fact that an airlock can be open? It can have both doors open at the same time, or
right. Douglas is a total moron. He deserved to die. Yeah. But
I don't understand what he was doing. Why do you grab a fistful of sludge and tear ass
with the open
door?
Container through both airlock doors that you're now leaving open with your helmet off to go look at it under a microscope?
Why? Because if it's invisible, it can't really hurt you.
Well, I can understand, like, you've got your lab area where you're actually growing your plants and doing your experiment, and then you've got another lab area that's got, you know, more analysis equipment, and there's a reason there's two airlocks between those sections for safety reasons, but you should probably, like, close those airlock doors, maybe? I don't know. I mean, why have an airlock? Also, was there an external window in that room? Because I could swear I saw a tree through a window behind those, their plant experiments.
I don't know. Yes, I believe so. I believe so.
Well, that, and if you're, you know, if you're biologically creating bacteria and whatnot, assume that there's a possibility things could go wrong.
Maybe don't vent that into the atmosphere.
Exactly.
Every 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Or, you know, give somebody the chance to be like, you know what, there's something loose here. Let me just go ahead and hit the button and stop that while we get it.
The lab is on lockdown, so we're not going to let you open the door to airlock 2, but we're fine venting into the atmosphere whatever is in that lockup.
Yeah. So, all right. So science definitely had its vacation, a little bit of a summer break. Yeah.
I adored Erica, though. She was awesome.
Yes. Erica was fantastic, and I'm absolutely calling for her as the next companion.
Yeah. Well, so the doctor. How many times have we gotten red herrings of the doctor saying,
she will die heroically at the end of the next episode.
Yeah. I hope not.
That, or she's going to be promoted to, like, you know, head the president of this company or something because she's going to overhaul their safety features.
Okay. At the absolute moment where the doctor is staring at a four tumbler lock, which inexplicably has been installed
right
in a bacterial lab. So rather than a flat sealed panel touch screen, nice electronics. We have digital things. It's, you know, 2017. No, we're going to have four tumblers that we have to spin. How many different ways to get out of the situation ran through your head as the doctor is staring through his glasses at a black wall?
Well, let's see. The fact that he's talking to Bill on a phone, which is, you know, you can easily do FaceTime or whatever the Android alternative is. Or
how about just a photo?
Yeah, that could work too. You know, the sonic sunglasses can, you know, basically restore the doctor's sight to a certain degree, but they cannot connect for video conferencing.
Right.
Oh, that's well, just, you know, too much. He couldn't see what was on the iPad screen, but he was fine with the digital screen on the bomb he made.
Yes.
Yeah.
By
but
feel.
I will say that I love the fact that the sonic screwdriver could not do it. It could not unlock the door.
The tumblers were made of wood.
That's why you had the tumblers, is because it had to be made of wood.
I will say, you know, I talked to a bunch of people about this that really got rankled about it. And our friend Don Cleese, who's been on a number of panels with us, he's been a good supporter of the cast for a while, said, you know, honestly, at the end of the day, if you want to get hung up on the fact that the doctor is stuck on the other side of the door as the one thing that really pulls you out of this episode, you've been watching the wrong series for the past 50 years. But all that being said, this felt clunky.
A little bit, yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not going to say that it was the end all be all and that I pushed back from the coffee table and said, no, I'm sorry. If my doctor can't even get into my luggage, I'm out of this. But well, yeah, I mean, all things being.
Bill's going to put a tumbler lock on the door of a room.
That's it. That's all she has to do.
That's all.
To keep it. She and Penny will finally have a decent date if she just invests in a couple of good padlocks.
Okay. I love the fact that her dates have been interrupted by the Pope and now the UN Secretary General. Like, where do you go from here? Who do you have to get involved?
Mr. Orange. Okay. Nice dig.
That was good. Yeah.
How convinced are you that they are actually not in the Matrix in this episode?
Well, they haven't done the random number test.
Mm-hmm.
Which apparently, according to the science that they just laid down, is the only way to determine that you are or are not, you know, a copper top.
Mm-hmm.
Well, although in any of those situations, well, yeah, I guess the doctor has become aware of the existence of the monks within some of the simulations.
So I was wondering if this is like the new simulation they're running where the doctor knows that it's a simulation.
I swear, if I get three episodes in to wake from a dream sequence,
Inception,
I'm gonna be pissed.
Yeah, no.
The only reason I think that is because if this is not still the Matrix, then these monks are incredibly powerful and able to like manipulate reality itself.
Okay.
Yeah, that's. But I mean, it would make sense if they were to say, okay, it was in a simulation, and that's how they just restored the doctor's sight. But at the same time, they can hack a CCTV system by waving their hand over a pyramid view screen. Their technology is so far beyond what even the doctor understands that I'm willing to just accept the fact that they can restore a sight. You know, it's one of those things. I want to see how the rest of it plays out, but I'm not saying that it has to be in the simulation because they did that. I can buy them being borderline magical creatures.
Well, for me, it wasn't just the doctor. It was also, you know, the submarine and the plane that they grabbed and the crewmen that they teleported out, which, you know, we could hand-wavy, you know, future tech. They did it that way. But they're awfully powerful.
Mm. Yes. Yeah, they are.
So we don't entirely know. I mean, I don't want to start involving the scenes from next week because that's, you know, that's just not what we do. Well, in our heads we may do it, but we're not going to do it here for the cast. But the doctor painted it very clearly. There are repercussions to just generally submitting to this consent issue. And we had gotten the impression in those final closing moments when Bill secedes that it was. That it was a bad move. Bill's decision, though, you know, and the emotional wrap-up in that. Again, amazing work from Pearl. I may not have been totally you know, 100% invested in the way that they did the whole the blindness reveal to her, but the way that she dealt with it and the way that she wore that scene and the impact on her, the way that you could see it smack her cold in the chest, and her reaction to it and what drives her to make her final decision. Again, you know, I cannot express how impressed I am with the work that she's been doing this season, especially for someone who, you know, stories be accurate for what they are, is really unfamiliar with the Doctor Who universe, and what that typically connotates as far as doctor companion relationships. She's figuring this out as she learns her character, mm-hmm. and this is what we're getting from it. And it's just astounding. I don't know whether at this point whether she still has anger in reserve that she's going to be throwing to him as a result of being kept unaware. I was going to say in the dark, but that would have been bad, huh?
a little too on the nose there.
We're just going to write that down. But poo-poo on us for not calling that one. We involved Missy. Where was Missy in this episode?
In the vault.
She's still in the vault.
Wow. So I'm guessing that if you've got, you know, at yes, in times of crisis, the Doctor is escalated to president of Earth. But in times of crisis, when the president goes, "Oh crap, guys, I got nothing. Let's go chaotic good. How about that one?" And he has to unleash Missy. I'm guessing that's what we're dealing
with. Chaotic good is an awful strong description of Missy.
No, it's under constraint. You're utilizing Missy.
Chaotic good is the combination of the Doctor and Missy.
Chaotic neutral at best is how you can steer Missy.
I'm not saying she is. I'm saying utilizing her.
Right, I'm saying, yeah, I get it. She's the tidal wave you're going to try and point in the right direction and get out of the way.
Yep.
She is the nuclear deterrent.
Let's just open every door on the airplane and hope for the best. I don't have any assurance that she's going to be the X factor involved in all this. But why would you even address her at the beginning of this three-parter, if not to say, okay, Pandora's box is getting a little rusty at the hinges, and
she calls time lady.
Yeah. So, I guess what are we dealing with? All we, you know, again, I don't want to discuss the scenes from next week. We only know at this point, if you weren't looking at the next time teaser for next week, all you have to go on is just the title, The Lie of the Land. Oh, puns. What could that possibly mean? So, you know.
Moffat's being clever again.
Yeah. And they're going to be running it a little bit early next week. I don't think that really has anything to do with anything. It's not going to be running any longer. The episode is the same duration. It just happens to be airing a little bit earlier UK time. I thought when they made the announcement that this was going to be one of those ones where they, oh, this is going to be like 70 minutes. They've really got a lot of material. Some crazy stuff's going to happen. But no.
Anyway. Nope, not really.
Oh, one last thought. I'm really lost on Nardole right now. How much of him is really human?
Do we really want to answer that question?
Have we seen the end of him? Is this Matt Lucas's exit?
I don't think so. Because we didn't see him melt and turn into goop.
No.
He's just a little unconscious and wheezing on the floor.
I think that this was just the, you know, the easy way to be like, oh, he's the Doctor's eyes, but we need him not to be for a little bit of time. Yeah. So guess what? Your lungs are human and you're going to collapse now.
Yeah, otherwise we would have just seen that same move where he brings the TARDIS in around the Doctor
right.
and then pops back out.
Mm-hmm.
Fair.
Yeah, I think it was just a cheap writing trick, basically. So
seemed to be a lot of those in this episode.
Yeah, well, hopefully they will pay off next week with The Lie of the Land. We ready to get into the news?
Yeah.
Yes.
I want to do this. So, just a couple of points to really kind of make out here. We had heard early on, immediately prior to this episode airing, there was going to be another strategic edit. Similarly to what they did in Help Me Out on the episode
title. Robot of Sherwood.
Yep, where we had to make some modifications based on events.
Current events, yeah.
In the news. We had, obviously, the Manchester bombing to contend with over this past week and a half. And there was a line. This was, I think, an easy edit. It was not nearly the same sort of modifications that they had done within Robots of Sherwood, but this was just a single line removal where they were talking about it was the discussion about the, what could be the potential linchpin to the eradication of life on Earth sort of thing. And as they're working it through, they thought terrorist act, lone terrorist, that sort of thing. So obviously making that decision. I don't see any issue with it. It didn't strike me as anything.
No, I didn't notice anything missing from it. It was, I think it was a good call, and it really didn't detract from the episode.
Well, we had talked a little bit about how they jumped to bacteria quickly. Maybe that's why. Yeah. If it was part of, more ingrained in the discussion where they threw out other ideas.
I guess, but even that one didn't seem like it was helping lead us towards anything. Mm-hmm. I would have liked a nicer walk towards Nardole jumping out, bacteria, and just jumping off with it. So, what do you think, Doctor? What could have killed him? A knife! <Yeah.
laughs> 1,000 billion knives.
And this is the nature of it. I mean, this is, unfortunately, when you have a series that runs through situations, instances, discussions of social events and political topics, orange presidents, that runs that closely, you're going to have to be prepared to make those kind of 11th hour decisions. Clearly hasn't been the first, second, maybe even third time. Definitely not going to be the last. But I stand behind that kind of edit entirely because it wasn't necessary.
Right.
At any other instance, probably, chronologically, historically, it might not have been an issue. You could have left that in. It would have been absolutely fine. But in light of everything, especially striking so close to home, it was just not necessary. So.
Yeah. Yep.
But then on to happier news. We got a bit of an early Christmas present that we're going to get again come Christmas.
Yeah.
It's not going to surprise anyone with Moffat writing the final episode of his tenure. He's going to turn to a director that he's worked with and has produced tremendous results. Rachel Talalay will be coming back to direct the final episode for both Moffat and Capaldi.
Yeah, I can't imagine. With the news and everybody got very excited about it, they thought, who else would you hand it over to? Because she has done such an exceptional job of closing out each of the seasons that we've been enjoying of late, especially during the Capaldi era. But then you talk about who's going to actually close the book on their tenure, Moffat's tenure, and it was just an exceptional choice. The thing that's running through my mind, can you imagine the emotional status of the rap party when everybody's closing the books and they're walking away from this, I'm thinking back to, do you remember all the screwball kind of rap party videos that they would do during the RTD era? They'd like do their little dance and songs and things. And they'd laugh about, look at, Tate and Tennant and blah, blah, blah. I really hope they do anything.
It's going to be a sad guitar solo from PCAP.
Is that it? It's just him out there playing some sort of Santana
with
song.
With appearances by Matt Smith and Karen Gillan.
Yeah. but this was a great little piece of news, and I know that she's tweeted as much. She's absolutely thrilled to be able to share with people that she's going to be doing it, and you just know that as a result, it's going to be that much better of an episode. I can't even begin to imagine what they're going to be pouring into this. This my may only, be one of the most important Christmas episodes we've ever had.
My only concern with this is that I really hope that this is just bidding farewell to Moffat and Capaldi, and that Talalay will come back to do more episodes under Chibnall.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if they have any sort of established working history together.
I'm hoping that you know, her work has merited the chance to work together in the future.
We'll have to ask. Yeah. I mean, by the time we see her next, we'll probably be seeing her at, well, we know we'll be seeing her at Galley next year. Don't know if we're going to get a chance to cross paths with her before then, but we might, you know, tweet her or email her and ask her. You know, she's chatted with us before to see whether she can even divulge that sort of thing, but she might be able to at least discuss whether or not she's had any opportunity to work with him, even on an ancillary basis.
Or even if she's, you know, even if she's willing to come back, it might be that, you know, she's moving on to bigger, better things, but who knows? Well, at least we have that much to look forward to. So
that's we'll quite see
how
bit.
It plays out.
That's a good one to keep hanging out there.
Exactly. Yes. All right. Well, this has been episode 235 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, safety measures are for chumps who don't know what they're doing.
This is Kier saying, World War III, what do you think? Basically, we're against it.
And this is Haley saying, I don't know the president. How would I know the president? I wouldn't have even voted for him. He's orange.
We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com, tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, or on Facebook at facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You should also go to GunnaGeek.com and check out lots of other high-quality geek-centric shows, or visit forums.GunnaGeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community.